GM just made you post.
Sweet. How's your day going today, Carter?
It's going good, at a coffee shop right now. Working on some roadmap stuff with some fun names. Looking forward to syncing on that, some alfalfa.
Oh yeah. Has all the snow cleared? Can you see the roads now?
You can, but at the coffee shop, there's 3 parking spots taken up by a mound of snow. So, depends on your definition of snow cleared, I suppose.
Yeah, I hope you're having fun with that. I just mowed my front yard yesterday, so different, just different environments, I guess.
Small flex.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm probably about to have like a huge wave of. Not allergic reaction, just like overwhelming of allergies. That everything is yellow right now. And we haven't had any rain in like 2 weeks, so it's just building up, ready for it to get washed away. I think we're waiting on one person from the persistence team. I believe Jerome is going to be joining us, so give this a few more minutes, and then we'll get this kicked off. Should be a really, really exciting conversation. I was able to join the Persistence 3-year anniversary Twitter space yesterday, which was really cool. Things move so quick in this space. Shade celebrated its 2-year anniversary, a month ago in Denver. And it was cool to see Persistence celebrating 3 years of making blocks. Was really cool getting to listen to some of the folks talking about their time building in the space, what they observed. I got to speak a little bit about, Shade working with Persistence and kind of some of the things we've observed as well over kind of building in the Bear. It's really interesting perspective to have, like a stance to be in, to where building through the bear market where activity was incredibly low. Money, attention flowing into this space was at local lows or all-time lows, and not all-time lows, but local lows, and being able to kind of come out the other side on that and see all this new innovation, all this new collaboration, which is one of the reasons we want to talk with a lot of the teams that we're collaborating with, because things move quickly in the Secret Network and Shade ecosystems, and we know it moves quickly in other ecosystems. So. Really excited to get the Persistence guys here. Carter, is there anything that you've observed in the market over the past week that you find really interesting, whether it be like, markets on Shade, just general crypto markets, anything you've seen recently that's kind of piqued your interest? Coffee shop might be overwhelming him. From my perspective, something that's been really cool to see this past week, for anyone who's in the Secret Network or Shade Telegram channels, I'm sure you've seen people talking about a token called Amber. It's been really cool to see this renewed flurry of activity and people having fun in this space. And so that's been, a really positive part of this past week. I think Amber launched last Thursday. Yeah, and it's been really, really cool, both as a community member and someone contributing to help build products that allow these types of projects to flourish and build their community. It's very, very cool. That's just like a highlight of my past week. Right. Should just be a few more minutes. Really appreciate everyone getting here early. Generally kick these things off 5-6 minutes after the top of the hour. Just let people roll in. Still waiting on one of the persistence guys, and then we'll get this thing kicked off. For anyone who hasn't been following persistence too closely lately, maybe you're not too familiar with liquid staking derivative in the Cosmos. Maybe you're just used to staking the traditional way, and you know, whether it be to try and farm airdrops, or you know, you want to try and keep it simple. I would still highly suggest checking out persistence just to get an understanding for what liquid staking derivatives are, how they can be beneficial, what are some of the pros and cons. Obviously, we'll be talking about some of that today. Really interested to get some insights from like the actual builders of liquid staking derivatives. Because, you know, like Shade as a venue for some of these liquid staking derivatives to be utilized, you know, we're really keen and interested on the thoughts of like what liquid staking providers are looking at for particular tokens, like which tokens do we think will have the best adoption as liquid staking derivatives, which tokens do we think will perform the best, which tokens do we think kind of fit the narrative of liquid staking derivatives. Like, yeah, so really interested to kind of dive into all of these things because, you know, I came into this space as a community member and started contributing about a year and a half ago. And so being in this space, you know, I'm obviously very focused on understanding these products really well, especially as we're looking to integrate these products into Shade's own product suite. But getting a better understanding from the actual builders of these liquid staking derivatives is something that's I think really important, not just for those looking to integrate them, but also, you know, those looking to utilize them. And we've done a bunch of spaces with Stride in the past, and we've talked about how liquid staking derivatives work there and the differences and some of the nuances for the Stride liquid staking derivatives. But we really want people to understand the differences between some of these different protocols, because there's some real differences in value proposition, the security assumptions of the liquid staking derivatives, and these are some of the things that most users don't generally don't think about. I see Jerome has joined. I invite you up to speak, sir. GM, can you hear me?
Hey, GM, how's it going? I'm so sorry for being late. Had to pick up my sons from school. Forgot about that.
It's all good. I could sit here and kind of talk by myself for a while. I'm sure the people in the audience are happy to have you here. They could stop listening to me and just talk. Yeah, happy to have you here, man.
What did I miss? What did I miss? Tell me.
No, I was just basically giving an overview of like what we're going to talk about today, why I'm really interested in diving into some of the topics that we're going to talk about, just because, you know, I feel like a lot of people can get caught up in a lot of these short-term thinking and not think about some long-term tail end risks and assumptions about assets, and really just wanted to dive into all things persistence. I was mentioning that I joined the 3-year anniversary Twitter space yesterday. And got to hear from some of the builders and some of the users about kind of the journey that persistence has been on, and perfect timing to kind of segue that into, you know, another Twitter space, you know, talking Absolutely. More specifically about what you guys are doing right now.
Happy to be here, man. Like, thanks a lot for having us and kind of giving us opportunity to speak and kind of again strengthen this. This partnership even further, and like happy to explain any questions to the community, like any kind of topics you have in mind. Happy to kind of go over those from the persistence angle. I mean, very happy to be here. So yeah.
That's awesome. Again, really appreciate you guys being here. I'll just kind of set the room here for everyone now that we got you guys here. Want to welcome everyone to another weekly Twitter space with Shade Protocol. My name is Red Eyed Bear. I'm going to be the host today for this awesome conversation we've got planned. Today, we're joined by one of the Chads at the Persistence team. Welcome, Jerome. talked a few times before in person and talked a few times on Spaces, but glad to have you back here again.
BMBM. It's starting to become a regular thing. I see you more than my mother, red-eyed bear. So it's kind of concerning, but it's also good in a way, I'd say.
No, I think it's a very good thing. And I was mentioning, for anyone who didn't catch the celebratory Twitter space yesterday, Persistence is now 3 years old. Just wanted to take a moment and say congratulations and just massive respect for the determination and drive you guys have continuing to build and push the cosmos forward.
Thank you. Thank you. Maybe a quick clarification. It's actually the Persistence chain is 3 years old. Persistence Labs, actually, or at least the people who have been building behind.
All right. After a brief 15-minute rug, we are back. Give this a few minutes to let people flow back in here. Glad to see you back here, Super Era. We'll give this a few more minutes, let people get back, and then we'll get back to the conversation. Appreciate the patience. I don't know if there's another community of users that would be as patient with Twitter Space as the crypto folks. Maybe it's the exposure to rugs left and right. Maybe it's just this, I don't know. But we're stubborn people. Shady Count, can you add me as a co-host, please? Your own. Welcome back after this brief 15-minute rug.
Thank you. Happy to be back. It's impressive how a product that big is still failing on such a regular basis, huh? It's just mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, I don't know if it was the layoffs or I'm not a dev, so I couldn't even begin to speculate. But yeah, it is quite surprising for how popular of a product this is that it struggles as much as it does.
Oh, well, I think we have to accept our fate. It is what it is until someone fixes it.
Yep, we're persistent. We will come
back.
We are. Okay, so I think we were we had just gotten to talking about the 3 year anniversary. You had mentioned that Persistence Labs has actually been, I assume you were going to say, building longer than 3 years.
Yeah, correct. That's actually where I got cut off because of the Spaces cutting off. But so yeah, the chain has been live for 3 years, 3 years and a few days now. But yeah, the team started ideating back in 2019, actually. So that's almost, I mean, I would say, I think it was end of 2019. So it's 4 years and a bit in the making and still going stronger every day. So yeah, it's been a cool journey and happy to be part of it and have a lot of you guys also be part of it for the last couple of months, at least. Definitely more active. It's been great.
Yeah. So obviously, we're not just here to celebrate the past with Persistence, although Shade and Persistence, have a wonderful history of collaborating together. We're really here to talk about the future of our collaboration and the future of Persistence. I want to talk about the future of LSDs, talk about the future of their utilization, some of the concerns and risks that kind of both of our protocols are monitoring as both the LSDs and their venues of utilization, from those perspectives. As well as what to expect in relation to new asset support. So to kick this off, I wanted to ask you guys a question that I'm sure you get asked all the time. How does an LST provider such as PStake, Persistence, determine which assets they want to create liquid staking derivatives for?
Yeah, that's, I think that's a great question. To be very honest, there's no written down strategy and these are the five criteria that an asset has to meet to in order to kind of go to market with it. But I think it's kind of common sense in a way. I think the asset needs to be in a way big enough to make sense because, launching a liquid staked assets, I'm sure you guys know as well, it's actually the launching of an asset is easy. We can add easily another asset every week if we want to. We can add every single Cosmos chain asset as long as they have ICA enabled. We can launch that. But that's not why we're creating LSTs in a way. The reason we're creating LSTs is to make the asset actually more like utilizable. Is that a word? Like easier to use or better to use in DeFi, and make actually that asset more productive, more capital efficient in DeFi, which is currently a little bit of the competition that you have between like the staking rewards that you generate and actually like using that asset in DeFi, and then kind of with liquid staking, you can do both at the same time. So when it comes to like choosing a new asset to kind of deploy, it's not only about like how quickly you can deploy, because that's the easy part. It's about what are all the use cases that you can generate with it? Like, what is the actual demand for that use case? And if you start off by choosing a super small asset, the use cases are probably going to be limited, because the next thing you have to do typically in the journey of any liquid staked asset is to create sufficient liquidity for that asset so that people can actually exit that position at any time. So the protocol will always give you a one-to-one exit with the unbonding period in mind. So let's say you have, let's say STK Atom liquid staked, you can always redeem that for Atom if you wait for the unbonding period at a one-to-one ratio. But the beauty of liquid staked assets is that very often, and then most likely all the time, you'll have a pool that is created with that asset on a decentralized exchange. And there you can actually just swap the asset, which might incur a little bit of slippage, but the bigger the pool, obviously, the less that slippage is. And you should be able to redeem that asset pretty much instantly at pretty much a one-to-one rate as well, or at least like to the exchange rate that it is. Like most of these tokens use a C-value module. But anyway, so first you build the liquidity. Then once you have sufficient liquidity, in the meantime, in the background, you're already building all these integrations, different use cases that you can have for that asset that actually make it more valuable. Like you want your liquid staked assets to be used in collateral, for example, as collateral to borrow against it, like whether that's other tokens, whether that's to mint stable coins, for example, as Silk, right? So that's then the next step, is to kind of go after these integrations. And then you want to make sure that these integrations and use cases actually bring value. So you have to kind of bring users to those integrations, create awareness for those, making sure that people actually know what they can do with those. I think one of the bigger use cases outside of like collateral or minting Silk, for example, or stable coins, is like leveraged liquid staking, in which people just kind of loop the asset through a borrowing platform to kind of just increase their exposure to the staking rate. But so to get back to your question, I think the first answer is like we look at like what is the magnitude of that asset, how big is it, and what's the actual demand for that asset being used in other use cases. Think obviously, what is the community like? Like, is the community quite DeFi oriented? Do they actually want a liquid staked token? Like, what is the value that we can bring to the chain? For example, there's chains where there's actually not that much economic security of the chain because there's not enough staking going on. So there actually liquid staking can be a real help, because like I would say DYDX is a good example of this, where they actually the staking ratio is pretty low. So it does actually help them if liquid staking comes into the picture. People can still use the liquid staked assets and kind of still provide security to the chain. So those are the things we look at typically when it comes to kind of expanding. And then once in a while, you look at like what else could be cool. For example, we did launch recently STK Hua Hua, for example, because there was no liquid stake meme coin yet, so we thought that would be cool to be first there. But yeah, I think overall those would be the criteria that we would be looking at.
I really appreciate you giving that context, because you know, when I first got into the Cosmos and I first started getting into DeFi and the first liquid staking derivatives started popping up in the Cosmos, you know, one of my first thoughts was like, this is really awesome. And given that, you know, all these chains are utilize DPoS, you know, I would imagine that technically all these layer ones in the Cosmos could have a liquid staking derivative. And as you mentioned, you know, for like persistence, one of the requirements is they have to have interchain accounts. But yeah, so I wanted to kind of get your thoughts on like, what is it that you guys or like LST providers in general are looking at? I like that you said there's no, you know, written down strict framework that you guys have, it kind of just depends on the token, the chain, its user base, kind of the utility it's got natively built out for it and kind of built out for its use cases around the Cosmos. So that's really cool. I appreciate that context.
And maybe one more thing, like is in a way, it's also like attention, right? Like I think we all know crypto is an attention economy and like you kind of have to be where the attention is. I think it's a lot easier to go where the attention is than to kind of try and bring the attention to you. And I mean, I'll give you an example of this as well. Like we've actually worked on a liquid staking product for Solana quite a while ago. Now obviously that kind of comes back into the picture now that we see the Solana ecosystem like has a lot of attention at the moment. So without spilling too much alpha here, it's something that we're more actively looking at again to kind of finalize that product and eventually like bring it to market. So yeah, those are the things we look at. Attention it's super important, and I think it's everywhere. And like we know, I mean, there's another asset that I think has a lot of attention, especially with the halving coming up. It's Bitcoin, right? So obviously we're looking at how can we make a liquid staked asset for BTC, which kind of with protocols like Babylon will become eventually a yield bearing token, right? So that's one other thing, like one other vertical that we look at is attention and like, yeah, the reach and the user base.
Damn, for the people who stuck it out through that 15 minute rug of the Twitter space, came back, that alpha was definitely worth it. That's really cool. I have another interesting question for you guys, and I know your answer is going to be slightly biased, but I still think it's very valuable to consider given the amount of time you guys have focused on liquid staking derivatives. What do you think users of liquid staking derivatives should be paying attention to when it comes to selecting LST providers? And I think we can assume that for this kind of thought that the asset a user wants to use is supported by multiple LSTs. What do you think people should really be looking at and should be considering when they're choosing which LST provider they want to go with?
Yeah, and I'll try to answer that in a like as non-biased way possible. I think, I mean, one of the main things for that I personally as a user would look at is security. I think security is a big aspect, like knowing that the LST provider that you're going to use is actually properly audited, that has published like these audits like publicly on their GitHub, things like that. I would not trust any like new liquid staking provider that comes in all of a sudden, offers a crazy APR on a product and doesn't publish like the audit reports, for example. That would be a big one for me. I think eventually the trust that you have in the team and making sure that there will be enough size into these pools to actually get the liquidity that you'll need on that liquid stake token. I think that's an important one. And then I think like it depends a little bit on how much you care about like certain values about like decentralization and stuff. But I do think validator selection is quite an important one. Like we all know that when you're just staking yourself, you have to choose typically one validator, or maybe you distribute across a few validators. But I think every liquid staking provider has their own way of going about this. I think it would make sense for you to look at like what's the validator selection that this liquid staking provider offers. Like, is that in line with what I want to see? Like some of them have more gated committees basically trying to dictate who will get that stake. Some others have more automated systems, and here I'm referring to PStake itself as very automated and open-ended system. Then you have others that are kind of allowing the user still to choose. Maybe that's something you want. Like as a user of a liquid staking provider, you want to show, actually, I want my stake to be attributed to that specific validator. So I think that's another important aspect. And again, there it's really about, maybe it's more about preference than anything else. But I would say, yeah, security and liquidity is an important one. And then also the trust and faith of that like liquid staking provider to be able to offer the use cases that will eventually like generate yield on your asset. Because to be honest, that's what it's all about, right? You want to have more yield of the same asset or eventually in other assets. So yeah, those would be the criteria I'd look at.
I really appreciate that. And I think all of those are would be kind of on my list as well. Security being number one, making sure that, like you said, there's good audit reports for this, looking at where can it be utilized, what's the liquidity for it. Because, you know, if you ever do want to exit a liquid staking position, you're going to need liquidity for that. And then also, you had mentioned validator selection. I personally think that's a somewhat of an underrated value proposition for liquid staking providers. I know with, you know, I can at least speak to the way that Stake Secrets validator selection is currently set up. We use a more of an automated objective framework that selects validators. Currently, there's 21 validators that are in the set. And basically, we set up a list of qualitative and quantitative rules for inclusion into the criteria that's effectively set up to promote increased network decentralization, network usability, network sustainability, and then just product sustainability as well. But I personally really like that you guys have more of that flexibility. I think that's something that State Secret is going to be looking to kind of expand towards in the future, where at least via shade governance, you know, this validator set or the selection criteria can be changed to maybe include more validators, less validators, you know, effectively whatever governance, you know, wants to dictate. Yeah, but we set it up with an objective criteria, like really focused on like objective network decentralization, usability, and sustainability.
Nice. Nice. I like that. And I mean, I'm a big fan of that methodology. It's also the reason why we're pretty close to something similar. But again, like, it's actually not an easy problem to solve. And like, I think there are a few valid like solutions in a way. And like, whether you do it like fully on chain, it also has certain restrictions. Like, you can't take into account how much someone kind of contributes to the community, for example, right? You can't contribute, or you can't see how much a specific validator is actually reviewing PRs on GitHub, for example. Like, those are all valuable things that definitely help to the network, but it's very hard to kind of formalize all of that in some code and some logic. So everything that's kind of off chain, I know that with certain methods you kind of ignore that a little bit, but in terms of scalability, it gives you a lot more options, because then you really don't have to have these like committees and manual decisions too much. And I'm a big fan of everything that scales. So yeah, but there's always trade-offs, you know.
Yeah, I'm very much in the same boat as you there. And just to be clear, Stake Secret launched in the beginning of 2022 as a smart contract-based liquid staking derivative. So obviously very different than the major LST providers like Persistence and Stride, which use interchain accounts and modules to do that. But anyways, yeah, I'm really glad you provided that context. You know, oftentimes, you know, we're kind of just guessing it. At like what is in the mind of some of the builders in this space, and we're particularly talking about liquid staking derivative builders. So really appreciative that you shared kind of your thoughts on like what people should be kind of looking at. Obviously, for each individual person, they have things that are more important to them than it may be to others. So everyone has to take into account their own risk tolerances and what they care about. But yeah, obviously, the thoughts from the builders of these actual liquid staking derivatives are important to consider in this process. So for most people, when they think about LST providers in the Cosmos, I would assume most people who at least understand what LSTs are probably think about Atom, and they probably are primarily looking at LSTs, the particular adoption for those LSTs. Although, as I mentioned earlier, you know, kind of about being in this DPoS ecosystem, there are so many worthwhile candidates for LSTs. And but focusing specifically on Atom liquid staking derivatives, what are the major differences between STK Atom, which is Persistence's liquid staking derivative for Atom, and other major Atom LSTs like ST Atom? Just for anyone who might not be aware of like some key differences there.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, truly in a way, like, look, liquid staking is in a phase where I think it's almost like commoditized. Like, it's relatively straightforward now. I mean, it's still a lot of work, obviously, but it's kind of set in a way that it's scalable to other protocols coming in, and like it's copyable, forkable in a way. So I think the main way for liquid staking protocols that they actually differentiate from themselves is actually along the criteria that we mentioned that people are looking at that we just discussed in the previous question, right? It's the validator selection, I think, is a very big one. I think there it's probably the biggest kind of differences between the most active liquid staking providers, like I'm talking about like Pstake and then Stride and Quicksilver at the moment. I think that's where they differ the most, the three strategies. So as I mentioned, like on the Pstake side, very automated, looking at on-chain metrics, very big set as well, typically more than 50% of the validator set selected just based on like just on-chain performance. Then if you look at like the way Stride does it is more, I would say, the Lido approach, where they had kind of have a committee look at validators. Again, they look at performance and stuff, obviously. But I think there it's a bit more manual and kind of figuring out like with a DAO structure of sorts who should be in the set. And then on the Quicksilver side, I think they use some sort of an intent-based system where as a like user of Liquid Staking Protocol, you can actually select where your stake goes to. I don't know exactly how they do it. I haven't looked at the details, but that's kind of high level. The differentiation between the three when it comes to ST or STK Atom, ST Atom or Q Atom. I think that's really the main difference. And then, of course, it's about integrations. I think most of the protocols try to go after the same integrations, some more successful than others. But eventually, it's all about the use cases and the liquidity. I think what I mentioned before, as security, it's not only about making sure that the code is all audited, because standalone the code can be saved. But often what people don't really know is that like once you start integrating and like using these assets across chain and in different protocols, you actually stack up a little bit the risks that you are taking, especially if there's not enough liquidity. For example, you could have, for example, an integration somewhere that relies on the price of a specific asset that comes from a specific pool, but all of a sudden there's a liquidation of that asset by quite a big holder, and the price in that pool goes down and the peg kind of breaks a little bit. Now this impacts you and you actually get liquidated on your position, but it was such a short term like of a price depeg that it actually shouldn't have happened, right? And that's somewhere like there's not enough safety in that integration, then you should actually be looking at like a time weighted average price to get those risk parameters set up and things like that. And I would say that's where like protocols can really kind of stand out and make sure that like it's not about doing most integrations. It's just about doing the ones that really matter, the ones that have use cases. And then when you do them, make sure that they're secure for the end user so that these cases don't happen and you don't have unhappy users, because it's always harder to kind of win back an unhappy user than to find new ones in a way. And like, you just don't want to have negative users that are having a bad experience. I think that just ruins it quite easily. So yeah.
I love what you said about like, it's not necessarily about integrating everywhere. It's about integrating in like the right places, the places where there's demand for the utility of these things, whether it be leverage staking, whether it be hedging, like shorting, longing, you know, just wanting to be able to, there's a whole lot of different things you could do, but really understanding the user base and kind of what they want to do with this token is also extremely helpful for, you know, finding out which of these integrations is going to be most meaningful.
Absolutely. Of course, sometimes you have to just try stuff as well. Look, I think.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Experiments are definitely a large part
absolutely.
Of this thing.
Absolutely. Because often you think, will this work? And then, like, yeah, it will. It takes off. It's like crazy. And then you have other things that you think, oh, this is a sure hit. And then no one actually uses it. But it's always interesting to experiment and kind of figure out, like, why is my assumption so wrong or whatever. And that's actually what I like about it as well. It's a fun part.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I honestly understand from a user's perspective, especially maybe someone who's not as engaged as, especially as the builders are, you know, we're in this every day. But I could understand why, from a user who maybe is a bit more passive in this space, not understanding some of the value of some of these experiments. But just like finding out, you know, how to do something right is awesome. It's also good to know how not to do something and what works and what doesn't work. And, you know, when you can do these scoped experiments, you know, they can still be valuable, even if the experiment is a, we'll say, in quotes, a failure. I don't even know if you'd call it a failure. It's just you learn something from it, right?
Absolutely, man. Like, and then I like super aligned on that, you know, like I think there's this quote, I'm not sure if it's a famous quote or I read it somewhere at some point. Like if you need 99 tries to figure out it 100 times work, like it's not that the 99 tries were a failure in a way. It's just like you figure out 99 ways not to do what you needed to do, right? So yeah, I fully align with that, man. I agree.
I think that was a Benjamin Franklin quote talking about creating electricity.
I hope I didn't butcher. I probably butchered the quote.
It was pretty close. I think he failed like 200 something times.
Oh, so, well, there you go.
Yeah, even more persistent. But yeah, one of the other things from a fee perspective, obviously people that are looking to use liquid staking derivatives in DeFi, they're going to be looking at, you know, what are the fees associated with the minting, withdrawing, the just general usage. What are the fees like for persistence, liquid staking derivatives? And then do those fees change based on each LSD, or are the fees the same across the board?
And that's actually a good question. Like I even forgot about that, like mentioning to look at that, because it's actually an important part. But I kind of don't think about it that much, because I know with Bstake, we've taking it very easy on the fees. Like every new asset that we bring so far, we try to at least go like 3 months without charging any fees to kind of gain adoption. Things like that, I think definitely help to spread awareness. But there's different types of fees that you can actually charge a user. Like you can charge like a fees when they're actually minting, which currently we're not doing on any asset. You can charge a fee, and that's I think the most common one, on the actual yield that is being generated. So basically, let's say you have daily, like the pool of let's say STK Atom daily accumulates, let's say 100 Atom on top, that kind of incorporates into the C value. You take a fee there, and that's I think the most common fee. I think ours, if I'm not mistaken, is at 5% across all protocols. I think Stride charges 10%. Quicksilver, I don't know, to be honest. And then you have some other like small fees that you can charge. Like we actually have a cool feature, which is like the flash unstake, where when there are actually like some users that have staked in a specific epoch, and there's other users that want to unstake in that epoch, we kind of try to match those in the protocol and kind of give instant liquidity to people for a small fee. And those are like small fees that as a protocol you can charge and kind of eventually end up creating value with for users in another way, whether that kind of accumulates to the token or whatever, like that's still to be seen. But yeah, I think fees, there's a whole ton of fees that are possible. I think at the moment for us, we're like pretty much saying that fees will come later, you know, like for us, the fee is not really the most important thing at the moment. But eventually, like it's always good to have the option to turn on fee switches. I think in a similar way that who's done it recently? I think someone Uniswap? I think Uniswap recently turned on like this the fee switch, right? After so many years, in a way. So yeah, I think. Fees are important, so definitely look at that. Make sure you're not getting charged an arm and a leg for a service that others provide as well. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I really, really appreciate that. That's, and, you know, as you're talking about this, I noticed that this fee structure is probably one of the biggest differences from, like, the cost of using a liquid staking derivative between something like Stake Secret and STK Atom, where Stake Secret has minting and withdrawal fees. It's a 0.2% mint and withdrawal fee, but there's no take on staking rewards. So it's a little different from a fee perspective. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, we're focused on providing one very specific liquid staking derivative that's meant to fit really well into our ecosystem. And mm-hmm. so the need for the different types of fees and stuff is a little bit different. But just as you were talking about this, I noticed like, oh, yeah, that is a, you had mentioned like most major, we'll say like interchain liquid staking providers, you know, they don't have this.
Yeah, minting, I think the reason for that, I think, is that you have a large portion of the transactions is probably routed through through the DEXs. So yep. as yep. a liquid staking provider,
DEX and stuff,
you so. Would, yeah, you would obviously, like if you're just as a liquid staking provider, you wouldn't be able to take any fees on the transaction, like where someone swaps, let's say the asset for the liquid staked asset. You'd only do it when it comes through the liquid staking actual protocol, right? But of course, if it's your own DEX that it happens, and in a way, like there's no need to charge a fee. So fully understand that every ecosystem kind of has their own use cases. That makes total sense to me.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You did a really good job of explaining why it would be a little bit different. And it's kind of cool being able to see these different models succeed and play out in these different ecosystems, like under different environmental variables. So that's really cool. One other question I had for you guys is, One of the hottest persistent liquid staking derivatives right now is STK DYDX. I've personally been focusing on it a lot the past week and a half. Been love seeing the activity and competition between the different LST providers, as it really does kind of make the space more exciting, and we all kind of benefit from that activity across the board. I was hoping for you to tell us a little bit about STK DYDX and maybe how it differs from other DYDX liquid staking derivatives like STDYDX, because if I'm not mistaken, there's some pretty key differences between them, just like the mechanics of it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, altogether, I think already DYDX for any liquid staking provider is a bit of an outlier if you look at it, because most tokens actually provide staking rewards or yield in the same asset. Like you would stake Atom, you would get Atom, and that kind of easily auto compounds. I think the difference with DYDX is that you stake DYDX, you actually get USDC, which is beautiful. That's like real yield, right? Rather than inflation compared to many other assets. But so what the result as a liquid staking provider is that you can't just easily just auto compound that into the C value ratio by adding it and kind of just liquid staking or staking the actual rewards that come in. You have to swap those rewards first back into DYDX. So that's actually very cool. And what we've done on our side also, because we have the luxury to have a DEX deployed on our chain, we actually routed all the USDC rewards to automatically be swapped for DYDX. So basically all the USDC kind of becomes DYDX. And then we stake that DYDX back again into the protocol so that the C value kind of auto compounds and kind of accrues in value. So it's like, in a way, you're very long on DYDX if you liquid stake DYDX, because every USDC reward that you get, you actually sell for more DYDX and you kind of dollar cost average into the asset even more, which is a pretty cool mechanism, I think. So we do that through the DEX that we have on our chain, which is called Dexter. I know that Stride is actually using Osmosis. There's a pool on Osmosis for the DYDX USDC pool to make those swaps happen. So currently I'm not sure if you're aware, but so on the DYDX community forum, Stride and both Stride and Persistence actually are asking the community pool for quite significant portions of the community pool to be liquid staked in order to further decentralize their chain and kind of decentralize and secure their chain, because they have certain risk with the TVL on the chain kind of becoming quite high compared to the stake ratio. But so with that, like if those proposals that are kind of ongoing, for which, by the way, we can use everyone's support, this is currently live proposal 47 on DYDX. If that proposal passes, we actually have a mechanism ready that will route part of the the rewards also through osmosis, just to ensure that because of the liquidity on Dexter being relatively low, to make sure that the users definitely don't incur any significant slippage on those trades of auto compounding USDC back into DYDX. So yeah, it's a pretty cool design. Obviously, it comes with a few extra complexities, but yeah, I think it's a pretty cool product. I think for the rest, I think the differences are the same. Like validator selection, I think, is a big one for us. Again, go all in on the full automation part and everything fully visible on chain. We have a nice front end as well that shows all the validators that are selected. And I think, yeah, the rest is pretty similar. But yeah, pretty cool product. And I'm very bullish on DYDX in general. Like, I think it's a beautiful product they have built as well. And yeah, it's cool to see.
Yeah, likewise. I'm totally on board with everything you mentioned. As you're talking about SDK DYDX and how, you know, you're earning more DYDX, or you're like auto compounding this DYDX, this to me seems like the perfect liquid staking derivative to pair against the stablecoin on an exchange. In my head, I'm particularly thinking about it being paired against Silk, because you're effectively able to still tap into, like, if DYDX is going up as you're auto compounding rewards, not only like if you assume price action is constant, just that accruing of rewards in the form of DYDX, as that goes up, you know, the pool ratio changes to where now you have more stable coins in your LP. So you are realizing that value, the earning of the USDC or whatever stablecoin it's paired against in real time without having to unbond your liquid staking derivative. To me, it's like a beautiful scenario. I'm going to have to think on this a little more, but it sounds like a really awesome
I'm glad you bring this up, because it's actually I've been thinking about something similar as well, you know, because there's actually users that gave us this feedback and say, look, actually I like to like receive my rewards in USD or USDC because it's something different, you know, like, and it kind of gives a way to monetize in let's call it stablecoin. The staking yield, which is pretty cool, but then, like, obviously as a liquid staking provider, we actually dollar cost average back into the asset, which is not something that every single user wants. Some users just want to have the USD. So I think you can actually build some cool stuff where you, as you mentioned, like you use the SDK DYDX as collateral. And you mint like the equivalent of stablecoin, like Silk, for example, to still give you that, like, in a way, stablecoin, but without having to sell your DYDX. I mean, I also have to think about it more, like how it would all work. I'm wondering.
I'm particularly thinking about the dynamic providing liquidity for STK DYDX against a stablecoin, and just how the impermanence loss would work. It is somewhat like being able to realize the stablecoin yield from staking with, like, in real time, instant unbond, instant claim, without having to. Obviously, you're subject to impermanent loss. But anyway, this is, my mind is like racing 100 miles.
That's interesting, because it in a way it is like, yeah, you're actually, if DYDX token goes down, you're actually realizing, yeah, your USDC. Or USD or SIL gains, basically. That makes sense. I think we should ideate on this more, but I feel there's definitely something there that we can make into a product that, as we discussed, has like use cases for sure and demand. I'm sure we'll find something cool there.
Yeah. And we're personally really excited to get SDK DYDX listed on Shadeswap. Really, really pumped for this. We currently don't have any liquid staking derivatives for DYDX right now. So really pumped to get SDK DYDX as kind of that first DYDX LSD on Shade.
That's some extra alpha here, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I had one last major question for you, and feel free to give as much context as you want or you don't want. I know you guys are going to be talking about this a lot tomorrow, but I wanted to ask you guys about prop 899. You had mentioned, you know, the prop that you guys are doing with DYDX for, you know, using some of the, some DYDX for liquid staking. And, you know, it's something similar with prop 899, but it's a little bit different as, you know, that liquid staked atom will then go on to be used for borrowing stablecoins. But just one wanted to say it's awesome to see persistence inclusion in this prop for a variety of reasons. I just wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts on the current state of the prop? And what do you think some of the benefits of this are going to be? One of the things that immediately comes to my mind is this is going to help spur and kind of encourage this wave of collaborative activity for interchain decentralized finance. But I'm curious, like, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, as you rightly say, we have a Twitter space on this tomorrow as well. And of course, like, I would invite everyone to join that one as well, because it's I think it's quite a big one. I mean, there's positives, and in a way, I see some negatives as well into this proposal. I'll give you both sides of my opinion. I think the positive is definitely the direction it's going in. I think this collaborative direction, I think a provider like Agoric or IST, Inter Protocol, kind of requesting funds like this, and then Atom community, like, properly discussing that. It's kind of, for us, it's helping the adoption of liquid staked assets for protocols. It's about, like, adoption of those stable coins. I think it's a good idea in a way. I think this idea actually came after a lot of discussions between Agoric and ourselves, between, like, allowing SDK Atom to be an asset to mint IST against. But so I think that's all the positives about the prop. I think it's great to see the proposition, like, also how the split will work, where the assets eventually will be used for. I think that's great to see, and obviously hope to see more of these proposals, because it helps us, and I think it helps a lot of people in the space. It's kind of a net positive for everyone, I would say. Now, the one thing obviously that I kind of would have hoped to see is kind of a bigger or a better, more accurate split between, like, I think they I'm not sure if that's actually how it went on chain. I haven't looked at it, but I think they proposed 90% to ST Atom from Stride, 10% to SDK Atom for P-Stake. I think that split, to me, is not really a representation of, like, what the community wants. I think there was a discussion on the forum that it's already quite one-sided, and, like, proposals like this obviously don't help. And if we want to get into a situation like similar to Lido and Ethereum, if we do a lot of proposals in this sense, like, it's not really going to help. And I think that's mainly my biggest concern about a proposal. Obviously, it has some positives for us as well, for the 10% that we would get with P-Stake. I'm a little bit concerned about the centralization aspect of it. The 90-10 split, I think that could have been, like, something like 60-40, 70-30, even 80-20 sounds better. Like, 90-10 sounds very lopsided to me. But again, in a way, don't want to take away either from like the credit that Stride deserves. They also work hard for these things and kind of getting those eyeballs. But again, I think long term for the ecosystem, I would really, like, urge people to really think about the impact that these proposals have, and just saying, okay, we go with the biggest because they are currently the biggest. If we keep that, like, story for a long time, eventually they'll be the biggest one in such a big position that whatever the community thinks will not matter anymore, right? And that's a position that I definitely don't want to go into with the Cosmos ecosystem. I think if you voted or will vote for a more equivalent split, I think you're kind of voting for the Cosmos ecosystem as a whole, rather than to kind of vote for a single provider. And we've always been very collaborative on kind of everything, and I think that's the spirit we've always had. And going to keep that as well. But I think we'll dive into the details tomorrow for sure.
Yeah, definitely. For anyone that's interested in this conversation, 100%, if you can, obviously, listening into this, I know I'm going to be listening in. I'm sure Shade Account's going to be listening in. You know, Shade Swap was listed as one of the venues for this IST to be provided as liquidity, which is awesome to see. Really, really awesome to see the Cosmos community, I guess, recognizing some of the, you know, some of the strides that Shade and Shade Swap have made to get where they're at, and the value that's provided as a trading venue. One question I personally had, and hopefully this will get answered. I actually believe it was asked on the forums. I don't remember if there was a good answer for it, but it's like, if there's not sufficient liquidity for the pairings that they're proposing, and they're going to have to swap some of this IST, you know, how are you going to handle the impermanent, or not impermanent loss, but like, how are you going to handle the price impact and slippage in those like low liquidity environments? So for like example, I think it was a few hundred thousand IST would be like put into the IST Silk pool. But if there's only 100 or 150,000 liquidity there, that's like a lot of price impact you're going to incur, unless you do it over a long period of time. But
Yeah, I'm not sure to, I mean, I don't think I've seen that question. I'm not sure if it relates to the liquid staked asset or whether it's specific to the stable coins part.
Yeah, it's more specific to the stable coin.
Then yeah, I'm not sure if I'm the best person to answer, but like I would say
I didn't mean to point this question at you. This was just like a question I personally
have. Oh, you want to have it answered for the product.
I was asking that.
Please, yeah, maybe, that would be great.
Maybe the answer could... that, you know, some of that STK atom is actually used to mint silk. That way you don't have to have that price impact.
Mm. That would be a solid answer, I think.
You know, same sort of LTV that you would take. You just have the position. Yeah. But anyways, yeah,
that's an interesting question, and yeah, but it would be cool if you can join and then ask that question. I'm sure, like, you can even submit the question in advance and kind of get some people to chime in. Yeah, from my perspective, I think to be honest, like when it comes to making sure there's enough liquidity, I think one thing that always helps, or let's say most of the time, it's adding incentives. I think we've all seen that.
One way to get liquidity.
That's for sure. The mercenary capital is there. Yeah, I think that will always be the case. But yeah, I think it's not a long-term solution either. And I think we're all here to build in the long run. So yeah, curious to hear that answer as well.
Yeah, well, we're getting, I know we had a brief 15-minute intermission at the beginning, but I believe we're getting right around the hour mark. So wanted to open up to if anyone has any questions, or if anyone wants to come up on stage and just say, hey, feel free to do so. We'll probably end this in the next 5 minutes or so. But while we're waiting to see if anyone wants to come up, Jerome, I was curious if you had any last thoughts on, you know, where persistence is at right now, and like what are some of the things you're most excited about on the horizon for persistence?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're actually in a very good spot, to be honest. Like, I think we've been working very relentlessly since 2019 in a way, and hard throughout the bear market. We've built pretty much everything, I think, that we wanted to build in terms of at least teams, in terms of people, in terms of skills. I think we know we can build products. We now have more recently kind of beefed up on the marketing side. On the corporate side, we're quite well settled. And I feel like we're kind of on the verge of like explosive growth in terms of like TVL traction, users, adoption. And all of that typically kind of like comes through more and more partnerships, more and more people to collaborate with. And yeah, we have a few big product rollouts coming in the near future. Kind of hinted at a few in the beginning of the space. We also have liquid staking for our own asset XPRT coming up relatively soon, which should give a pretty big boost in terms of activity on the chain. utility of the token as well. So those are definitely cool things that we have to look out for. Hopefully these community proposals with DYDX Pass, with Agoric, with even like we have something on Stargaze on the moment as well. Hopefully we can gain some momentum there and really kind of, how I call it is like it's a snowball at the top of the hill and it's ready to kind of start rolling. Yeah, that's how it feels, you know, like we've been building, we've kind of walked up the hill and the snowball is ready and it's kind of ready to start rolling.
Love it. Sometimes I like the fact that Twitter spaces are just audio. Sometimes I wish there was video because I just got this big smile on my face as you're saying that. Yeah, again, really appreciate you joining us this afternoon. This was a phenomenal conversation. Definitely going to be sharing this around. For anyone who's listening in, make sure to share this space, share this recording. There was a pretty decent amount of alpha dropped in this space. So hopefully we've got good listeners, good amount of listeners coming back and listening to the recording again.
Thank you so much for hosting. Like I've learned quite a bit. Like yesterday was the first time I hosted a space myself, but I feel like hearing you do it kind of gives me a few more insights to manage it even better next time. It's very, very well hosted and like you're very, very calm and a good host, man. I appreciate that.
I appreciate the kind words. Yeah, I just enjoy talking with interesting people. And I'm glad we get to, you know, be here in this environment right now. Like you said, persistence is primed. I feel a very similar way about Shade and what we've got coming down the pipeline. We've got liquid staking derivative for Shade. The testnet is going to be going live this week. I don't know if we've actually announced a date for it. Maybe we have. I'll just add this as a little bit of alpha here at the end. The goal is to have this public testnet live tomorrow.
Amazing.
So, yeah, and then excited to get that out. We've got a few other major products in the pipeline. We've got huge analytics overhaul in the pipeline. So the storytelling of Shade Protocol and Silk is about to get so much more clear. Feel very primed from Shade Protocol's perspective and really excited how we're going to collaborate in the future.
Beautiful. And it's been beautiful to see. And like, congratulations, guys. Like, I've been following it from afar first and now from a bit closer more recently. And it's been beautiful to see your growth as well. It's well deserved. And it's great to see you guys continue to build. And can't wait to see what the future brings, but I'm sure it will be positive.
Well, with that, we will officially end the space. Thank you to everyone who joined us today. Appreciate your patience as we dealt with Twitter, Twitter spaces abruptly closing. And again, thank you to the Persistence team for being here. Thank you, Jerome.
Thank you so much.
If you guys already don't follow the Persistence team, if you don't already follow the Shade Protocol team, make sure you're doing that. Stay up to date with everything that they're doing. And hope you all have a great rest of the day. And like we always say, there's plenty of room in the shades. Have a great rest of the day, guys.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the burbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of trash is under the dirt. We rape them under the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Motherfuckers walking around here looking faceless, trying to make a living selling friendship bracelets. Dead ends dragging out the max amount of payments. Red down days got them acting all bankless. Yo fam, what? Check these tokenomics. They probing this bear, flexing broken knives. I had to lay my soul down, I'm just roasting otters. And then to end a long day, 11 bowls of chronic. Never known a politic, I was born to frolic. It's been my policy to pollinate all over the plot. We got a lot of apologists jumping in at the top. We like to measure their velocity before they hit rock bottom. Over impossible loss, it's all moss, and I'm liking the odds. Fondue in the morning, forming mycological bonds. Flick the cap, though the road is highly involved. Flip a coin, diary falls. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come, first serve mentality stuck in the fur. herbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. Trying to figure out the max amount of dinner lace, stacked in non-toxic, just to get a better place. Smacking on the hostage, like the shit is play for keeps. Clowns, white knight, and all these Maybellines. They call it implausible, when model after model keeps on ripping off the coat and going full throttle. Beats, tearing apart your community. All these low-hanging fruits bearing zero liquidity. Got a planet in reach, coming standard to each. I'm on the back 10, stargazing after the siege. Commanding all the management to grab a few seats, and then we'll round up the beasts and send a messenger east. Y'all better sign a release when I'm bumping these beats. Hands up if I got motherfuckers drumming the streets. Yo, we got a few dubs, we got a couple defeats, and if you're coming for the king, you better have some of each. Motherfuckers screaming out loud, looking for mercy, before they find themselves working a corner down in Jersey. What could be worse? Misrepresenting the first come first serve mentality, stuck in the verbs. I'll be numbing up first before discovering what works, and we'll see what other kinds of treasures under the dirt. We rape and plunder the earth, sit and wonder about the worth and play, ring around the rosy while the thunder is served. We'll be right back.